From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, Republican mayhem. Trump and Clinton take Super Tuesday. Abortion at the Supreme Court. Race at the Oscars. In Salt Lake City, Mitt Romney came down like a ton of bricks on Donald Trump.
Donald Trump is a phony, a fraud. His promises are as worthless as a degree from Trump University.
In Detroit, body parts and blistering attacks in the GOP debate. Marco Rubio went after Donald Trump as con man.
He's trying to do to the American voter what he did to the people that signed up for this course. He's making promises he has no intention of keeping. And it won't just be $36,000 that they lose. It's our country that's at stake here.
And Hillary Clinton took seven states in the Super Tuesday primary she celebrated from Florida.
Thank you all so much. What a Super Tuesday.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with Karen Tumulty of The Washington Post, Annie Carney of Politico, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on what is happening in the GOP. And where are you on Clinton, Sanders, Scott Kelly, Chris Rock? Join us anytime at On Point Radio or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us now from Washington, Karen Tumulty, national political reporter for The Washington Post. Karen, welcome. Welcome back. Great to have you.
Thanks. Boy, this week it feels like we ought to be doing this in person at a bar somewhere.
Yes, at a bar or in a boxing ring. I don't know. And from New York, Annie Carney is with us. She reports on politics for Politico, been on the trail with Hillary Clinton. Annie Carney, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Annie, and Karen.
I mean, there is so much here. We've got to get into the debate last night. I have, once again, how many times have I said that this season? I have never seen anything quite like that, and I still had not until tonight. But the sequence is important here, and Mitt Romney, who was, of course, the 2012 Republican presidential nominee, here he was at the University of Utah, Salt Lake City, talking about Donald Trump, attacking on all fronts.
Think of Donald Trump's personal qualities, the bullying, the greed, the showing off, the misogyny, the absurd third grade theatrics.
And on and more, more Romney.
But you say, wait. Isn't he a huge business success? Doesn't he know what he's talking about? No, he isn't. And no, he doesn't.
A danger to the Republic. And on the Today Show earlier today, still at it, Matt Lauer asked the former Republican, presidential candidate Romney, if he is considering getting into the presidential race. Really pressed Romney to answer directly.
There are no circumstances I can foresee where that would possibly happen. But let me say something else.
I can foresee.
No reasonable scenario I can imagine.
Just slam the door on it. Close the door. Unambiguous. You will not run for president.
I'm not running for president, and I won't run for president.
Okay, Karen Tumulty, we'll get into the debate last night. I mean, part of me doesn't want to, but of course we have to, and we will. But Mitt Romney doing this, if he's not getting in, what is this? Is this the statesman Romney just can't take Trump, or what's going on?
Well, a number of things. I think he has become the voice of the establishment on this. His argument, and by the way, it's worth recalling that this is sort of in his DNA. His father walked out of the 1964 Republican convention over Barry Goldwater's stand on civil rights. But I do think that Mitt Romney's argument here is undercut by the fact that he himself in 2012 went to great lengths to get Donald Trump's endorsement. And it wasn't like it was a mystery what kind of person and figure Donald Trump was at that point.
Yeah, but he was a billionaire Republican, I guess. He wasn't running for president. Isn't that quite different?
He was the leader of the birther movement, and he had toyed with the idea of running for president.
Yeah. Any undercut? Does Romney cut glass with Republicans when he speaks up so prominently and so soberly against Trump? Is there a big swath of Republicans who say, I was thinking about it, but maybe I won't go there?
I don't know. I mean, you saw Donald Trump sort of dismiss him very quickly. It was the first debate question last night. And he sort of slapped him down saying, this guy lost, he should have beat Obama, and he wanted my endorsement in 2012. And you also saw Democratic groups like Correct the Record, which is supporting Hillary Clinton, and the DNC going after Romney on this idea that he sought Trump's endorsement for himself. And I think that points to the fact that they'd still rather run against Trump than Rubio or Kasich and or Romney himself say he gets in. They were sort of piling on to attack Romney rather than backing him up on his attacks on Trump.
And of course, Trump saying Romney would have dropped to his knees to get his Trump's endorsement. I didn't know just how vulgar exactly he meant by that. But then last night, not much hesitation about bringing his genitalia into this. Here we are.
He hit my hands. Nobody has ever hit my hands. I've never heard of this one. Look at those hands. Are they small hands? And he referred to my hands. If they're small, something else must be small. I guarantee you there's no problem. I guarantee.
Donald Trump on Marco Rubio making cracks about his hands. And you know what they say about small hands. And Jack, here we are just into terra incognita.
We certainly are, and with the emphasis on the terror. I disagree with Karen. I think Romney's speech was an act of civic courage, and it contrasts with Christie's, it seems to me, civic cowardice, his kowtowing to Trump. You know, I think Romney essentially has set up a moment of civic testing for voters who are tempted by Trump. They're angry. Because at an establishment that's promised to reverse the Obama era but hasn't delivered except to the donor class. But Trump, as Mr. Romney says, is not the answer. To paraphrase a line from Hamlet, Trump is a prince of this disorder, a Pied Piper of false promises, false hope, and, alas, real anger.
A little more of the flavor from last night. Marco Rubio went after Trump, said, we cannot have this conservative at the head of the party of Lincoln and Reagan.
Two-thirds of the people who have cast a vote in a Republican primary or caucus have voted against you. They do not want you to be our nominee. And the reason why is because we are not going to turn over the conservative movement or the party of Lincoln or Reagan, for example, to someone whose positions are not conservative.
Because he's not a conservative, Rubio saying there, and Ted Cruz diving in saying if it's Donald Trump, with all the kind of things that are being laid out now by Romney and others about his business history, lawsuits over Trump University and so on, it's just going to be one difficulty, one flare-up after another if he faces Hillary Clinton. And then it gets just into the wow. Well, here it is. Cruz, Trump.
If we nominate Donald, we're going to spend the spring, the fall, and the summer with the Republican nominee facing a fraud trial.
Oh, stop
with
it.
Hillary Clinton
saying, why did you give my campaign and my foundation
$100,000?
It's a minor civil case.
And with Hillary Clinton pointing out that he supported her four times in her presidential race.
It's a minor civil case.
Donald, learn not to interrupt.
There are many, many civil cases.
Count to 10, Donald. Count to 10.
Okay, Karen Tumulty, we're going to sit back and look at the numbers here. What happened on Super Tuesday, what appears to be coming. But think with us for a second about American political culture and the implications of what has happened and is happening in this campaign season.
I think it is in many ways, it's a reflection on the Republican Party, but it is a reflection on the culture as well. I think that it's the media culture, the internet culture, just things are allowed to be said now and not challenged that never were before. And on top of this, the Republican Party has put itself in a pair of handcuffs here, and that is that last summer they were so anxious to get Donald Trump to sign a pledge that he would not run against whoever their nominee is, that now they themselves are bound by this same pledge to support whoever their nominee is. Mm-hmm. And if the voters of the Republican Party decide that this is who they want as their standard bearer, I think that, all the machinations people are now talking about at the convention, a contested convention, sending this to several ballots, would only fortify all the doubts that, these Republicans who are voting and independents voting for Donald Trump have about the Republican establishment and how it does business.
Does it undercut the Cruz and Rubio arguments, Annie Carney, that for all the heavy, heavy, heavy now criticism they lay on Donald Trump, they say in the end they would vote for him?
I think it totally did. That was Rubio's calling him a con man all night. And then towards the end of the debate, the question is, will you support the Republican nominee? And they have to say yes. I think it was a damaging question for them at the end of that debate.
But he said it's because Hillary Clinton is so much worse that even as bad as the Donald is, he'd have to go there.
They signed the pledge. They have kind of no way out of it. One thing I just wanted to turn back to Romney for one second. I think when we're looking at what he said, really the question is, I mean, everyone can slam Trump, and it's been proven that it doesn't really do much. The question is, what is he telling voters to do? What's the way out that he's proposing? And he did have a proposal, which is one thing that people have been thinking about, whereas these other candidates have to go back to their states and win their states. So he said, you know, if you're in Florida, vote Rubio. If you're in Ohio, vote Kasich. Ted Cruz won Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Divide it up. Divide and not conquer. Divide and
deny and Donald Trump the majority who would need, so you'd have a contested convention.
Right. So the question is more is that a proposal that can work? Because he didn't endorse anyone. But he offered this solution. So the question is that actually a viable solution to stopping Trump?
Karen, that seemed to set it up for Romney to be the guy who would step in. Now, he's denied it, flat out denied it on the Today Show today. But does it still look like you? Like maybe he's setting himself up to try and be the guy on the white horse here at a contested convention?
Yeah, what he was basically proposing is to turn the Republican primary process into a game of keep away. And, you know, you would throw open the convention and fulfill the dreams of every political reporter in America who's lived their lives hoping to see a brokered convention sometime.
Not since the cigar smoke floated over everything.
But this does not set the party up for, you know, a strong campaign in the fall. I mean, they are having record-breaking turnout in these primaries, and those kinds of people are going to be turned off by this.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news. Republican mayhem, Mitt Romney attacking Trump, Trump and Clinton taking Super Tuesday. Karen Tumulty from the Washington Post is with us. Andy Carney from Politico. Jack Beatty's here. You can join us. Can it get any wilder on the Republican front? How are you processing this uncivil war on the debate stage across the GOP? What did you make of Mitt Romney's skewering deconstruction of Donald Trump? And how do you see the Clinton-Sanders contest now? Fox News debate last night, tough questions. You've got to hand it to Fox. They have been tough throughout this primary debate season. Megyn Kelly there back in the face of Donald Trump. Republican Senator Marco Rubio and Donald Trump went at each other. Trump with his little Marco dig, and then Rubio cutting in here after host Chris Wallace says that he has a policy question for Donald Trump.
Let's see if he answers it.
I
will. Don't worry about it, Marco. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, little Marco. I will.
All right. Well, let's hear big Donald.
Don't worry about it.
All right. Wait.
Don't worry about it, little Marco.
Gentlemen.
Let's hear it, gentlemen. You want to show up.
Gentlemen, you got to do better than those.
Little Marco. Jack, I don't know. I was reminded there for a minute of Back to the Future. You got Biff the Bully, and there's Trump. And, you know, it's like he's almost boiled over into that kind of caricature of bully on the stage. But, you know, I mean, that's his rep. He'll fight. If you fight him, he'll fight you.
Yes, and that seems to be a warrant of authenticity to his voters. I mean, his very boorishness tells them this guy isn't going to play by the rules. The rules, what have they done for us? Nothing. So, you know, there's a kind of here's my proof. I can shake up the system. You know, it's such an embarrassment, though. And I thought Mitt Romney's his comment, really, he said, you know, presidents and even nominees, quote, bear the responsibility of being an example for our children and grandchildren. And then he said, we've quoted it, but worth quoting again, think of Donald Trump's personal qualities, the bullying, the greed, the showing off, the misogyny, the absurd third grade theatrics. I mean, think of that. Think of that every day in your face as president.
And Republicans have record turnout. There is dissatisfaction. People thinking maybe this is the way to turn a key in that lock. Jim in Omaha, Nebraska. Jim, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just like to remind everyone that this election or every election is really about the voters.
Yep.
And the voters have spoken. The Republican voters like Trump. He's a populist. He is telling them what they want to hear, unfortunately, in sort of a vulgar sort of way.
And so, A-OK, here we go. Listen to the voters. Let me get more on that theme, if I may. Jim, thanks for your call. Gabe in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Gabe, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. So, yeah, I agree with Jim that the voters certainly have spoken, and it's kind of amazing to me that, you know, Romney and the establishment is ready to kind of disenfranchise their own people and call them suckers, you know, being led by a con man. But more importantly, I think that Romney and the establishment really has no ground to stand on going after Trump for being racist or misogynistic, because they've been using those same tactics, you know, since I can remember. And it just seems like, you know, Trump is better at it than them and beating them at their own game. But, you know, it's the chickens coming home to roost. I mean, these are the techniques they've been using for years to get their base worked up.
Same tune with a better drummer, maybe? Let me get one more. Donalyn. Thank you, Gabe. Donalyn's calling. Donalyn, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello, everyone. I just think that the Republicans at this point are trying to have their cake and eat it, too. I mean, either you respect the office of the President of the United States or you don't. So they challenged Obama, you know, and tried to neuter his presidency when he was legally elected by the, you know, by the population. They shut the door on him for his Supreme Court nomination.
What does that have to do with Trump, Donalyn? What's the link?
Well, because right now what's happening with Trump is that it's like the chicken coming home to roost. Either you respect the office of the President of the United States. They're saying that Trump does not rise to the level of what we would expect to have for a president. But the way they've treated the presidency says that, you know, who cares anymore? You know, you kind of degraded the office anyways by the way you treated Obama in office.
Yeah, you attack the president and maybe, I don't know, everything is open for debate. I mean, there are other ways people could have gone throughout this whole thing. When that stage was very crowded, you had other kinds of voices up there. They got nowhere. John Kasich still up there last night in the GOP debate saying he's a serious candidate.
Throughout this campaign, I've talked about issues. I have never tried to go and get into these kind of scrums that we're seeing here on the stage. And people say everywhere I go, you seem to be the adult on the stage.
Karen Timley, what about the issues point here? A lot of that, just getting driven off the stage and all the theatrics. Is it enough just to channel this sort of rage and make broad promises? That's been enough, I guess, for Donald Trump in many ways in this season.
Well, I think Donalyn had an interesting point. I think that people who are voting for Donald Trump are basically saying they don't respect anything about this system and they want to see it blown up. And so then to come in and, you know, John Kasich saying, I want to talk about issues.
Yeah.
He's also running last at this point.
Yeah.
So it's one thing, too, that I have found interesting in talking to people, talking to Trump supporters, you know, at various points along the way here, is the degree to which they could seem to be able to have two separate sets of ideas in their minds. And they're comfortable with that, that they will, on the one hand, tell you he's a truth teller. He says what he thinks. And then you will, you know, if you ask them about a specific outrageous comment he's made, they'll say, oh, he didn't mean that. So it's just, I mean, people who are looking for consistency here, people who are looking for, you know, any kind of engagement on an ideological and issue line are kind of missing the point of why people are supporting Donald Trump.
Emmett is calling. Emmett, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. I just wanted to say I read a very interesting article on Vox.com basically making the argument that Trump supporters are sort of authoritarian in nature and they're looking for an authoritarian figure. And this was based on a whole bunch of polling and a lot of political science research. And essentially, I think the problem for the Republicans right now is that they're missing, they're kind of missing the boat because they don't understand what these voters are looking for. These voters are basically scared. They don't care about social issues. They don't care about taxation issues. They just care about ISIS. They care about fear. And it's interesting because that's, of course, the environment that Republicans have fostered for, you know, the last 15 years.
You say fostered, they might say fought, but, well, certainly fostered awareness of threats, no question about that.
Tom,
Jack,
can I
yes?
speak to, yeah, I commend that piece in Vox, 62-page research, really, into this question. Authoritarian, who are they? Well, like to quote from the article, people who score high on tests for authoritarianism, when they feel threatened, look for strong leaders to protect them from outsiders and prevent the changes they fear. Now, that describes, according to the article, 44% of white Americans, and Trump draws half his support from them. And they're drawn to him by his promise of strong government action against undocumented immigrants, Islamic terrorists abroad, and they would limit civil liberties in the fight against terrorism at home. You know, he may lose, but the authoritarians remain to be exploited by the next demagogue and the next.
But Annie, we've faced enormous challenges in this country before and not gone down an authoritarian path, not seen a figure quite like Trump. What's the difference?
Well, I think it's something in the moment. First of all, it's not the same thing what's happening on the Democratic side, but you can see the excitement and momentum that was fueling Bernie Sanders for so many months as also a desire for an outsider and a desire for change, a desire for something besides what Hillary Clinton and what John Kasich and on both sides are
true,
selling incremental
absolutely true,
change.
But a different flavor and a different texture, you know, I mean, and he's hardly gone after the private parts of his combatant folks there.
But I think there's this sense of anger. Like, Trump uses this vague language, which I think is what people are appealed to. He says things like, something bad is going on and we have to stop it. Like, what? Something bad is going on. And then that taps into people's just generalized fear, and they kind of slot into there whatever they fits for them. But I think that part of it is that the economy is doing better. Obama's popular now for among Democrats, but there's a kind of a lag, and people still don't feel it in their own lives. I think it has to do with still that the country's recovering from the recession, and there's a lag to people still feeling like they are suffering and don't want incremental change, want big change.
We should say right here, we're going to be talking with former Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney in this hour on Monday. So tune in if you are in the mood for more of Romney. You know, Karen, on the other hand, there are times when I listen to Donald Trump and you hear that he's not a prisoner of ideology, and that can sometimes sound very appealing after all these years where people have just been locked into positions and unwilling to sort of step back and look at reality and make practical changes. He sounds like a guy who might do that. I mean, maybe that's a significant part of his appeal.
Well, I do think he's certainly not a check the box kind of candidate like we've seen from both parties. I mean, you know, he stands there on a Republican debate stage and says Planned Parenthood also does a lot of good things for women, and gets away with it. And that is,
he says he'd cut off funding if they don't stop abortion. But nevertheless, he says they work for women's health. Cruz won't say that.
And I do wonder if at some point, I mean, Jack talks about what the next, you know, authoritarian is going to do with this base of support. But maybe he has also, you know, a silver lining here could be mm-hmm. that he's perhaps going to free people from these kind of rigid, check the box, don't color outside the ideological lines positions.
Couple more callers right here. Draper calling from New York. Draper, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir.
You know, I love your program, and I just want to tell you, I'm amazed that no one has brought it up. Or only brought it up very minorly,
okay.
That the Republican flip-out has to do with their response, with a segment of that party's response to the first black president of the United States.
How do you mean, Draper?
These
what do you
people,
mean?
I mean, we have seen unprecedented obstruction. We've had Paul Ryan running as vice president saying the president stole money from the Medicare or Medicaid fund, using that type of language, or we won't meet with him, we don't want to talk to him.
But what's the link to Trump? What's the link to Trump, Draper?
Nominee.
What's the link to Trump?
What I'm saying is, the link is, here you have these so-called establishment saying Trump is going too far. They're the ones who've gone too far for 8 years. They have emboldened this man. They created this monster, because when you go that far, there's no turning back. You can't put that genie back in the bottle. Of course not. Nothing's ever going to be vulgar enough. You have to keep going, and of course this is who supports him. But the other thing I would point out is, if you look at who supports this man, if you ever see them being interviewed, they are themselves vulgar, they're racist, they're ugly people, and they know that he's not going to be able to deliver. They simply want to hear nasty, ugly, racist messages.
Draper, we've got it. Get outrageous, and things go outrageous. Well, maybe. One more right here, Jeff. Thank you, Draper. Jeff in Madison, Wisconsin. Jeff, you're on.
Yes, I'd like. Hi, Tom. I'd like to hear your guests discuss this. I'll make it quick. Here's my scenario: Trump doesn't get enough delegates, goes to the convention with less than needed. The convention's brokered. Several votes are held. No progress. It's hot in July. Everyone's fed up. Suddenly, someone says, "Let's draft Paul Ryan." A couple of votes later, he gets the nod. Suddenly, it's July 21st, 2016. Ryan is the nominee, and no one has been talking about his tax proposals because everyone is focused on Trump's body parts. I'd like to just hear that. I think Democrats have to pay attention to Romney's playbook.
And Paul Ryan slides right in. You do have John Kasich saying on CNN this morning that he now expects a contested Republican convention in July. Karen Tumbley, what about the prospects for that and the scenario that our caller from Ryan's Wisconsin shares?
You know, at this point, I think anybody who would have predicted anything that has happened would have, you know, I don't remember those people. So I do think anything could happen. But it is true, as several callers, the point they've made. Donald Trump is who Republican voters are saying they want. And if for some reason the convention gives them someone other than someone they want, they're not going to show up in the fall.
So watch out. And think about it, if that's the case. One more on this on Trump. Brandon in Austin, Texas. Brandon, you're on.
Hi, thanks, Tom. I just want to make the point that it's very interesting to hear Rubio and Cruz basically tell the world that Donald Trump is a liberal, as if somehow that's worse than being a racist right-wing billionaire. I marvel at the fact that you can look at a political group that generally is, you know, proposing doing the right thing for as many Americans as possible, and then suggest that those people are worse than outright racists.
Of course, their lament is that he's not right-wing or conservative enough. As we heard Marco Rubio say in that clip we played, Brendan, I appreciate your call from Austin. I've got to get, we'll have more, but I just began to get the Democrats in here because that is half the ledger, and that is exactly where this whole thing is headed. Sooner or later, these two meet. This was Hillary Clinton in Miami on Super Tuesday, turning her attack not on her Democratic opponent, Bernie Sanders, but on the Republican candidates.
It's clear tonight that the stakes in this election have never been higher. And the rhetoric we're hearing on the other side has never been lower. Trying to divide America between us and them is wrong, and we're not going to let it work.
And Bernie Sanders in Vermont, he took it, saying he's not giving up, not out at all.
35 states remain. And let me assure you that we are going to take our fight for economic justice, for social justice, for environmental sanity, for a world of peace to every one of those states.
Bernie Sanders still in there fighting, and we'll look at that. Annie Carney, how big for Clinton was the win on Super Tuesday in South Carolina before that huge runaway vote there?
It was huge. The Super Tuesday was huge. South Carolina was kind of the beginning of that. It makes it very hard for the math to add up for Bernie Sanders to get enough delegates to get the nomination at this point. By mid-March, the Clinton people are thinking it will be virtually impossible. But what we heard, just listen to what he says in his speech that you just played. He's not running. He said we're running to get our message about economic justice out, to get our message about climate sanity out. He kind of already seemed to be pivoting to saying, I'm running for something besides winning the nomination. I'm running on a message. So that means he's not going to go anywhere soon. I would also note that we're about 40 minutes into this program, finally talking about the Democrats, which shows that maybe Bernie Sanders staying in isn't such a bad thing for Hillary going forward. I mean, otherwise she might get lost in the shuffle here on primary nights. No coverage of her, just coverage of Trump and the Republicans winning. And debate nights going on and on about the Republicans and her just getting lost in the shuffle. So I think Bernie staying in the race, maybe a silver line for her is that there's at least some coverage of what's going on in the Democratic field.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, Chris Rock hosted the Academy Awards on Sunday, taking on the Oscars diversity problem. He said there's a reason African Americans hadn't protested the lack of black nominees at Oscars past.
Is that real thing to protest?
protest. You know, it's too busy being raped and lynched to care about who won Best Cinematographer.
Boy, he stepped out that night. Scott Kelly returned to Earth after 340 days, almost a year in space, landed in Kazakhstan and said, it's good to be back on Earth.
A year's a long time, you know. I felt like I'd been up there my whole life. You know, after about the first 6 months.
Sounds like a long time listening right there. And actor George Kennedy died at 91. Tough guy turned comic in later life. Pulled heartstrings in his Oscar-winning performance as Dragline in the 1967 classic Cool Hand Luke.
Hell, if they didn't know it for, they could tell right then that they weren't ever going to beat him. That old Luke smile. Old Luke. He was some boy. Cool Hand Luke L. He's a natural-born world shaker.
Cool Hand Luke, that's back in the day. We're looking at a week in the news. Republican mayhem, Mitt Romney attacks Trump, Trump and Clinton on Super Tuesday. Scott Kelly back on Earth. Wonder what he's going to think of it all when he really gets into the headlines. Maybe he's been watching from outer space. I don't know what 240 miles up is. Annie Carney joins us, politics reporter for Politico from New York Today. Karen Tumulty's here, national political correspondent for The Washington Post. Jack Beatty is here, and you can join us this hour. How do you see Clinton Sanders, that contest right now? Where are you on the Supreme Court Stonewall, on the Texas abortion case, on Clarence Thomas speaking, asking his first question in how many years? Apple or FBI, where are you? And does Chris Rock deserve an Oscar for his race talk, humor, candor? At the Oscars, how do you think things look to Scott Kelly coming home to all this? A couple more on politics, and we will turn Dan in Bettendorf, Iowa. Dan, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to make the comment that I think the Republican primary season has entirely proven how correct H.L. Mencken was when he said nobody ever went broke betting against the intelligence of the American public.
Hey, maybe you're right, but look at the politics we've had for years and years now. Is the public wrong to want something other than that? I don't know. All kinds of response online. D. Brown says, who asked Mitt for his opinion? Rich says, why are you not going after Romney's hypocrisy attacking Trump for ruining companies and workers' lives? Remember, Rich says, Bain Capital. Lots of ways to cut it. Vic in Framingham, Massachusetts. Vic, you're on.
Hi.
Hi. What do you think, Vic? What do you see?
I just want to make one very quick comment about the Republican debate last night. I've never watched one of those before, and I was so ill.
What a way to start.
After watching it. But I know that you wanted comments on the Democratic side.
Sure.
I happen to feel the burn. I think he's the only one that's stating things that are honest and out there, whereas Hillary just seems to be hiding behind the fame of her husband and the fact that she was a Secretary of State without revealing anything else. And I'm really sick of it.
What do you mean hiding? I mean, she's out on the campaign trail all the time. She's been out there for months. She's talking and talking. You can hear that.
I hear it, but I don't hear it. I'm just afraid we're not getting the whole picture. We're getting a publicity stunt. And in my regard, she's as bad as Trump. She's full of it.
Okay, Vic. We've got it. Jack, you want to come in there?
Yeah, well, you know, Bernie Sanders has a problem. And Super Tuesday revealed it. He's angry. Democrats aren't. And that's one reason they're not voting heavily in these primaries. 85%. Approve the job President Obama is doing. 66% of Democrats. The country's on the right track. 56% think the federal government is about the right size. Sanders is selling revolution to voters who want continuity. To use David Axelrod's formulation, Democrats seek a replica of Obama, but Sanders is offering them a remedy instead. The appetite for remedy is on the Republican side. Sanders is really courting the wrong party.
I don't get that. Karen Templeton, do Democrats live in a different country from Republicans? People talk about the Trump voters, and they talk about all the anger out there, all the unhappiness. I mean, it's not as though Democrats are all one percenters by any means. Why wouldn't they share that?
Well, I think Sanders is going about this in a very different way. You know, it is, as Annie said, sort of evolving into a message campaign. I think what he is trying to do at this point, he is not trying to inflict massive amounts of damage on his opponent. He's, you know, needling her on releasing her speech transcripts to Goldman Sachs.
Yep.
But that is more about – I think that what the Bernie Sanders slash Elizabeth Warren wing of the party feels right now is that they would not be hugely unhappy with a Clinton presidency, but they do want to see her surrounding herself with a different kind of people that, you know, as Elizabeth Warren keeps pointing out, three of the last four Treasury secretaries appointed by Democratic presidents had ties to Citigroup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are trying to pressure her on who she surrounds herself with, who, where she gets her advice. But it is not hard to see them, you know, showing up in the fall to vote for her.
Annie,
can you see Donald Trump?
Is the opponent.
Yes.
Point taken, Karen. Annie Carney, can you see that sticking? Clinton's rhetoric has certainly changed to the point where Sanders supporters are complaining that she's like, you know, using his riffs practically.
Right.
But that's a little different from really changing the people around you and policy when you're in the White House. Do you see her really turning her policy compass more in a Sanders direction?
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think he has pushed her to the left throughout the campaign. And right now, there are conversations going on between Clinton's campaign and Elizabeth Warren's shop. And like Karen said, Elizabeth Warren's big line is personnel is policy. And she will need, at some point, Hillary Clinton will need Elizabeth Warren to help bring over the Bernie Sanders people into her camp and unite the party. She will need Bernie to do it. And the way she will get them to get on board is, I mean, they're going to have to negotiate hard for Treasury Secretary, for other positions that they care about. And in order to beat Donald mm-hmm. Trump and whoever it is, she will need the party united behind her. And a lot of Bernie people, like the caller we just heard, have this view of her that's not going to change after two decades in the public eye. And without Bernie and Warren working hard for Hillary, it's not going to happen. She's not going to get them on her own. So she will. There will be a negotiation there of how she
yep.
brings it all together.
Ben in Austin, Texas. Ben, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to make the point that myself and most of my friends are Bernie supporters, and our feeling is that we're not going to vote if Hillary is the nominee, simply because, 3 points, I really, Hillary cannot fix our campaign finance reform system when she's accepting donations from these big companies. She says that she will, but how can we trust her to? And I just think that she's going to get eaten alive, to be honest, because Bernie has been so generous in his debates. And he hasn't brought up a lot of the points in a lot of her past. And you can be assured that Donald Trump will. And so that's kind of my
feeling. So you would sit out the election, so you'd rather have a President Trump than a President Clinton as a Sanders supporter?
No, it's not that at all. It's just that I don't want to participate in a system that is fundamentally corrupt in its campaign finance system.
Yeah.
I can't vote in good conscience for somebody who is receiving money from these giant corporations.
Boy, the stakes will get big, Ben, but we hear it right now. That is interesting. Jack, that hardly bodes well.
Oh,
if that's the, you know, Ben sounds like a young, and bravo to him, Sanders supporter. If that's the sentiment come fall, ooh.
Oh, that's, you know, if the Sanders people walk, or even enough of them, that could really be trouble. I mean, he's found a real vein among young Americans who feel the injustice of our economy, the subsidized, the purchased injustice, as just weighing on them with their debts and with their, you know, rather bleak prospects for a future of opportunity. And the campaign finance system that just is, it is weighing on Hillary, her decision to speak to, you know, Goldman Sachs and other groups in the interim between her Secretary of Stateship and running for president, that has to rank as one of the most foolish and self-destructive things she could have done.
Was it worth it? Yeah.
Can I just add one thing? I had outlined before the break about why maybe Bernie staying in is a good thing for her. This is the flip side of it.
Uh-huh.
She, now that she's most likely to be the Democratic nominee, she needs to work on uniting the party and bringing in people like this who don't want to vote for her, and focusing on a general election message. And yet she's got two debates in the next 10 days, a really hotly contested primary in Michigan. where she has to keep drawing differences with Sanders and keep turning off voters like the one who just called in, who are very turned off by her, and she has to continue differentiating herself from the candidate they like.
I've got to ask you, Annie, we heard this week the news that one of her aides has now been granted immunity by the FBI, and I think it's the aide who set up the private server in her home whereon all these emails accumulated.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? Is there testimony coming? Could Donald Trump be right that we know there's an investigation? Could she, in fact, be facing some kind of real legal trouble charges?
I still don't think so, but it is once I think that we're going to – the email controversy scandal sort of went to the back burner for a long time while Bernie became viable, and I think we're going to see – that coming back to the forefront once she's wrapped up the nomination as the next hurdle she has to get beyond again.
Wow, watch that space. Tony in Detroit. Tony, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, just a couple comments. First of all, I got a couple callers back said something about that Republicans and conservatives hate Obama, and I'm just so tired of hearing that. I don't care really what color. I would have liked to have seen Condoleezza Rice run as the first.
Haven't you seen evidence of awfully sharp opposition to Obama? I mean, it can certainly look like hate Obama very often.
I can understand that, but I mean, I completely disagree with all of his policies.
You don't buy that it's race or anything. You're just saying it's a legit policy opposition. Okay.
In my opinion, okay. I'm a working class guy. I'm going to be a Trump supporter because he's anti-establishment.
And when Mitt Romney comes out and says, you know, he's a phony and a fraud and all the rest, what are you thinking, Tony?
Donald Trump comes out and says what he wants to say, and he doesn't care where, you know, I'm just not that he doesn't care, but I'm sick of the PC also, and he's completely not PC.
So, Tony, working guy in Detroit, there for Trump and ready. Thank you, Tony. Thanks for calling. Louisville, Kentucky, Hillary is on the air. Hi, Hillary.
Hi. I just wanted to respond to the caller that called conservative racists and billionaires. And I just want to say that's the type of rhetoric that incites hate and anger to people of different parties. And I think that type of talk needs to be killed by radio and media because we need to stick to the facts. We need to stick to the politics of it all. And I know, conservatives, I am a conservative, and I'm a Cruz supporter. Conservatives, though, tend to have, and especially white conservatives, not to be racist because I'm not, but conservatives have a stigma that follows them that we are racist and that we love money, you know?
Well, I mean, leave the money aside for a minute, but there's an awful lot of history here around race, racial policy. I mean, people don't just talk about this out of nowhere, Hillary.
No, and that's absolutely true, and that's something that Americans have to live with. But what needs to happen on both sides, I am independent, more conservative, but on both sides, we need to work as a country to see people as human beings. To stop looking at their color, to stop bringing it up. The man who called earlier, he obviously is liberal-minded. There are plenty of conservatives who also like to think about color all the time.
Do you think Donald Trump is leaving color and race off the table in his speeches, in his comments?
I don't like Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. I do not like Donald Trump. I think that Obama becoming president, a lot of people thought that he would end racism. That's ridiculous because he didn't. You know, color is still coming up, and I just want to see an America where we stop talking about it and we start talking about people being people.
Hillary, I really appreciate your call, and I'm right there with you on that sentiment. How we get there, that's the issue. Got to look at Jane Kelly. This is the federal appellate judge in Iowa, potential nominee for the Supreme Court, now being vetted by the Obama administration. This is a former public defender who has been strongly supported by her home state senator, Charles Grassley, who, of course, is chairman of the committee that's going to decide whether or not the Senate moves forward with an Obama nomination. Karen, are you watching this? Will Chuck Grassley put a dead stop in front of his home state fave, Judge Jane Kelly?
Boy, that is a man who is under pressure from both directions. Every time I turn on my TV, I see these ads, you know, call Chuck Grassley and tell him not to, you know, bring up any nominee. But it's also interesting to see where Obama goes on this, because you have the idea of putting in a consensus kind of choice that would sort of expose this as pure politics if they won't even consider that person. Mm-hmm. But you also have Hillary Clinton on the campaign trail saying this needs to be a strong progressive voice, in which case it would be, you know, a statement candidate. And, you know, I honestly don't know which way the White House is going to go on this.
Watch that space, boy. There's all kinds of pressure building up right there with the Texas abortion case and more before the court. Jack Beattie, I just have to touch on Chris Rock and the Oscars. I don't know if I've ever seen a bigger workout of the American race issue in an arena of public entertainment and art, you might say, than Chris Rock gave that. I mean, he dove in on it from the top and he stayed on it. And I thought, all in all, it was a pretty incredible streak of candor and openness in a setting. I've just never seen anything quite like that.
And raw truth. I mean, his phrase, yes, Hollywood is racist. It's guilty of what he calls sorority racism. Oh, boy, what a phrase. And we know what that means. I know my pal. I was at school with so-and-so and so-and-so. And in that way, the majority just keeps replicating itself in instance after instance.
You're just not Kappa, his joke there on the sorority front. We know how that works. Kudos to Chris Rock for putting it right out there, but keeping some pretty high spirits and very entertaining touch at the same time. Maybe that's the way to deal with it. Jack Beattie, it's always great to have you here. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for The Washington Post. Karen, so great to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Annie Carney, politics reporter for Politico. We'll be back on the trail soon, no doubt. Annie, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, have a great weekend. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Look for our newsletter at onpointradio.org. This is On Point.